Okay, first of all, let me thank the organizers for inviting me for this great venue. This is indeed very appropriate to talk about complex networks and social networks here, because this is an effort, joint effort with a number of Hungarians involved, starting from László Barabási and Professor Kertész and a number of others. Okay. To talk about social complexity is indeed a really tall order from the physics background, which is my background. So the question is, can it be modeled? Can it be analyzed? Well, obviously, I think you can guess what is my answer going to be, since I'm talking about analysis and modeling. Okay, forms of complexity. Well, in the biological system, brain and mind, there are a great deal of complexity involved. Also in social systems, and it's not always in the numbers what matters. It's basically about the interactions. So we are dealing with basically a kind of communication system where there are many non-identical elements which are linked with all kinds of or very diverse ways of interactions. So we are sort of naturally having an approach of a network. Okay, these systems, due to interactions, they have emergent properties in terms of structure, function, and response. And since it's an interacting system, it is kind of natural to think that if you have data, then you would be able to do the analysis of the data, and then build on that, do the modeling and even simulations in terms of perhaps even predicting the system's behavior. Okay, what is the paradigm of social life? It consists of the flow and exchange of norms, values, ideas, other social and cultural resources, and that is channeled through a network. There is an approach by Robin Dunbar, who is now at Oxford University, this kind of from the point of view of ego or ecocentric approach to social networks, and he's claiming that there are layers, different layers. There is a supporter clique for few people, basically family or kin or things of that sort, then sympathy group, then a band, a clan, which is up to 150. This is the so-called Dunbar number. It's not very accurate, of course. It varies. That is of the order of magnitude number. So that's a number which describes the total number of active human relations which cannot be exceeded because of our cognitive limits to keep up with the stable relationships. In the previous talks, it was mentioned that perhaps the brain is the most complex system there is. And why, you can ask, why is it so? The social brain hypothesis tends to be an answer to that in the sense that we have evolved to handle social interactions among groups, societies, and such. And basically, I think it is claimed that something like 80% of the brain volume consists of neocortex, which is there to handle the complex social interactions. It's a computing device to handle these complex interactions. Okay, we can look at the scales of social networks in terms of structural things. There's that friendship, kin, groups, communities, up to society. Dynamical, in the dynamical sense, the social interaction, events like calls, dynamics of groups, group formation, and dynamics in networks like rumor spreading or information spreading and things of that sort. So the question is, how does microscopic translate to macroscopic? Well, we have traditionally in social sciences have had this empirical analysis approach where a lot of data is gathered through questionnaires, but that is anyway quite limited. The scope of the social interactions is or can be wide, but the strength is based on these interactions are based on individual recollections. So if you are claiming that, claiming in terms of a friendship of some other individual, you can say that you know the person, or you know on the first name basis, or we are friends, we are good friends, or very good friends. But the question is there, how to measure that? The other question is, what is the scale and how subjective that is. The subjectivity comes into picture that if I claim that I'm a good friend of somebody, he can claim just that I barely know the person. Another approach has given us by this ICT information communication technology, where all kinds of digital footprints of our actions are collected. So there the records can be really large, can be consisting of 10 or tens of millions or even more events and individuals and things of that sort. However, the scope of social interactions is a new one, but rather narrow. And the other fact is that the strength is based on measurements. So, for example, we have had with Laszlo, we have had access to great data set of one mobile phone operator in Europe, and which has millions of private subscriptions, and we have the events, voice calls, text messages within that operator, and also I think nowadays to other operators. To construct a network, we have used this reciprocity that if I make a call to somebody, there is a social link only when that somebody calls back to me. So here social interaction strength can be described in terms of minutes spent over the phone, or the number of calls each way, or either way. Okay, constructing the network from that, there is a network over here, which is just a sample, a few thousand nodes, but that looks like a like a mess. But if you look in detail, then you can see structure there. There are communities which are strongly linked, and then the communities, between communities, there are weaker links. Okay. Then we can ask, what is the local structure? There is this hypothesis by Mark Kronawetter, saying, which is called the strength of the weak ties hypothesis, which is saying that the tie strength between two people increases with the overlap of their friendship circles. So we have a situation over here where there's no overlap between, in these two, in case of these two individuals, there's no overlap of friendship. There's some over here and full overlap in this case. So indeed, what we see that if we either use the duration strength of a social interaction, it increases as a function of the tie. The neighborhood overlap increases, and at the same time, the tie strength increases. The same goes for the number of calls. So this was one of the first verifications of this hypothesis. Okay, you can also ask what would happen in terms of the global structure if you start sort of cutting the connection. So here in the beginning you have the whole network, and then you start taking the connections out. You can do it in either way, in two ways, or many ways actually, but in two main ways, sort of descending order, such that you start taking the stronger links first off, and then go in a ranking order down towards the weaker links. When the situation is such that you have taken 20% of the weaker links out, still you can see the structure of the network maintaining more or less. Then if you do it the other way around, in an ascending order, starting from the weaker links and going to the stronger links, then this, when you have taken the same amount away of the links, this has, the whole network has more or less disintegrated into smaller parts. So indeed, you can say that the role of weak and strong links is different. And it is the fact that the weak ties tend to keep the society together. So somehow, coming from the Nokia land, as they say, Finland, where the Nokia logo includes the slogan that connecting people seems to have a kind of wisdom in it. I don't claim that they knew about the strength of the weak ties hypothesis when they formed the slogan, but indeed being connected even weakly to others keep the society together. That's what we learn about it. Okay, then you can ask the question that how would a diffusion of information spread through the thing. Empirically, you can claim that okay, the weaker links, since you are seldom in contact with the other person, the bandwidth, so to speak, or the speed of information going through the weak link is small. And then vice versa, with the stronger link, it is faster. So in the empirical case, the speed of information hopping from one individual to another one would be dependent upon the strength of the link. Then as a reference, you assume that there is no dependence on that. So you say that the speed is the same, so only the structure matters. In that case, what happens is that the piece of information goes through the whole network very rapidly, indeed. But in the case of the empirical situation, it is much, much slower, this curve. And if you take an individual run, you see that there are these kind of plateaus where a piece of information gets trapped. Okay, so even the human society being ICT, information communication technology aided, it is not really the most effective one. So here's a simulation, but let's, I think the time doesn't allow. So this is a kind of simulation of the spreading through the sample real network. You could imagine it to be a rumor, and then it extends over the network in 4 days when it is adjusted to the sort of proper time. So then let me just quickly ask that, can you model a social system? And how can the modeling illuminate social questions? So I believe so. How parsimonious can these models be? As a physicist, you tend to claim that quite so. And indeed, how can these models be validated? Well, by comparison. Well, doing modeling, you should realize that the modeling is like, models are like maps, useful when they contain details of interest and ignore the others. So let me take an excerpt from Oxford mathematician who, as an author, used name Lewis Carroll. He was a mathematician, and Charles Dodger, I think, was his original name. And so this is an excerpt of one of his writings. Sylvie and Bruno concluded, saying that, what do you consider the largest map that would be really useful? About 6 inches to the mile, only 6 inches, exclaimed mein Herr. We very soon got 6 yards to the mile, then we tried 100 yards to the mile, and then came the grandest idea of all. We actually made a map of the country on the scale of a mile to the mile. Have you used it much? I inquired. It has never been spread out yet. The farmers objected. They said it would cover the whole country and shut out the sunlight. So now we use the country itself as its own map, and I assure you it does nearly as well. So you have to be rather careful when you do the modeling if you want to do something, get something out. Okay, quickly about one model where we wanted to model the formation of a social network of similar kind as we analyzed. So there are two basic sort of mechanisms claimed to be the important in the social type formation. Psychic closure, meaning branch of branch, and focal closure, such things as people sharing hobbies and some activities. Okay, then the model sort of comparison with the observed fact is that there's a local attachment and global attachment. Okay, let me just show how it comes about, and indeed you see the structure of the network, the statistics is the same, local structure complies with the weak ties hypothesis and the global structure also shows that the role of weak and strong ties are different. So as a final thing, I wanted to show just one analysis we are embarked on. Looking at the data once again, and now we have the demographic data, so we know the gender and the age of the individuals, and we're defining that the friendship can be measured in terms of the frequency of contact between the ego and his or her friend. So here you can see one thing that that indeed people start having early on preference for the opposite sex. They start calling, for example, the boys, which are described with the blue curve, start here. First of all, they have males as their best friend, but early on switch on, and then at the age of 32, they reach the peak, and then interest goes down. But females start much, much faster, and they stay active much longer searching, I guess, for the partners. So this is the age distribution. So 20-year-old egos, either being male or female, have interest of their same age people. If you take 25 years older males and females, that then sort of evens out. So you can construct this kind of network. This is just a last example of what I want to show before ending, is that basically I think there's a kind of family here. This is a couple, 50-year-old female and 56-year-old male. Okay, let me just... this is the frequency of calls between them within a certain time period. But then if you look at possibly these are the, this is the son, 20-year-old son, and this is the 23-year-old daughter of that couple. So indeed what you see is that females at a later age, they switch their interest definitely to their children. They sort of lose their interest to their husbands. So perhaps that is a kind of natural, natural to expect. Also, you can see that there is a hectic courtship going on over here, since they are in contact quite a lot, and also quite hectic over here as well. So, and then you can see also the asymmetry. These numbers tell that this lady is calling 74 times within that period of time, but possibly her husband is calling more than twice as much to the lady. And so on. And also here you can see that young lady is more active in calling to the potential boyfriend or husband to be more often than the other way around. So okay, I think let me just finish here, leaving this. Let me just show the last slide. What is the sort of kind of home taking message over here? Well, going slowly. I'm sorry. Okay, well, never mind. Okay, I thank you for your attention.